On today's show, we are going to hear Shahid Bolson deliver his message to the Israeli people on an online podcast. And next, we will hear part of an interview with Norman Finkelstein. And it's a very long interview. It is 84 minutes long. So we can only bring you a part of it. And the link to the rest of it will be presented at the end of the show. You can also find information about this show on our online presence at kpip-lp.org. That is our radio station website. And there you will find a link to our weekly schedule. And on our weekly schedule, you can click on the links to each show, and we will present to you from that webpage information that we have about the shows that we're presenting here at KPIP, and also how you can listen to the syndicated shows that we present and the created shows, such as The Long View. We'll have a link that will take you into our Longview archive. So, with that said, first we have Shahid Bolson, message to the Israeli people.
If you could address them, what would be your message to the Israeli people?
You know, in the Muslim and the Arab world, we sort of have been taking it as a truism, you know, for years, that the United States basically serves Israel, that America is controlled by Zionists, and that the U.S. government will do anything, no matter how much it costs, to save and protect Israel. I think there's a lot of Israelis who probably think that way too. But an objective, rational assessment of the situation would paint a very different picture. I think Israelis need to recognize, if they don't already, that the United States is not your savior. It's your worst enemy. The U.S., whether you know it or not, and whether Muslims understand it or not, is actually treating Israel the same way that they treat everyone else, with complete contempt. I mean, look, they are supporting Benjamin Netanyahu, who is the most unpopular, the most despised, the most corrupt, the most incompetent, the most psychopathic, delusional, and despotic ruler that Israel has ever had. And he's responsible for both prolonging and worsening the conflict with the Palestinians. Netanyahu has made a career on diverting attention away from the internal domestic concerns that actually matter to Israeli citizens, that matter the most to Israeli citizens, by endlessly talking about security and the supposed threat that Israel faces. And of course, the domestic problems in Israel just get worse. And the conflict and the security situation actually just gets worse. And America loves it. They don't care about Israel's domestic issues. They don't care about the socioeconomic issues, the socioeconomic concerns that Israelis have, the high cost of living, the disparity between rich and poor. They don't care about corruption in Israeli society and so on. And these are the predominantly, these are the issues that matter the most to Israeli citizens, to American Israeli voters. But as far as America is concerned, the only thing that matters is continuing the strife and conflict. That's all they care about. They don't care about the welfare and the stability of Israel, the safety of Israeli citizens. You see, Israeli citizens want to treat Israel like an actual country, and they expect it to behave like an actual country, and they think that their lives and their concerns should matter like they would in an actual country. But to the United States, Israel is a policy instrument, so the Israeli population doesn't matter to them, and what matters to the Israeli population doesn't matter to them. The relationship with the United States has been incredibly detrimental to Israel, despite what everyone thinks. It has prevented Israel from becoming a normal society. Now, part of that is driven by the by diaspora Jews in the U.S., who, like most diaspora communities, are generally far more radical and ideological than their people back home. And this diaspora community in the West, particularly in the United States, makes a huge amount of money exploiting Jewish emotional attachment to Israel, you know, getting them to fund pro-Israeli lobbies and so on, which mostly just makes a handful of American Jews very rich. But it's mostly driven by U.S. policy interests and the utility of Israel as a vehicle for an endless flow of cash to American defense companies and as an sort of offshore research and development hub for the Pentagon. The U.S. does not want and has never wanted for Israel to be at peace with their neighbors. They've never wanted Israel to integrate into the region. That's not Israel's function as far as America is concerned. It doesn't matter to them that this is the only way for Israel to ever actually become a normal society. It doesn't matter if this is in the interests of the Israeli population or not. They don't care. They're using you. They're using you, the Israelis. They're exploiting you. The Americans, the West, are using you. And it's absolutely against the interests of your people. Obviously, the only way for Israel to ever progress as a society is to dislodge themselves from the United States, from the West, and to integrate properly into the region. Until they do that, none of their domestic issues will ever be resolved. They'll never even be addressed. Until they do that, they will never be allowed to do anything but be a policy tool of the U.S. and lose both their lives and their souls in the process. I mean, they're making you do things that are against your beliefs as Jews. They're making you do things that are against your own humanity. They're pushing you to do things that make the world see you as monsters. And more specifically, you're being seen as monsters by the people who are in that part of the world where you are. Properly, Israel should be a global South country. It should be a Middle Eastern country, and it should share the values and the priorities of the global South and the Middle East. But because it was a Western colonialist project from the beginning, and because it continues to operate exclusively as a colonialist project, it is seen as, it is perceived as, and it sees itself as a Western nation. And you're never going to be able to be a normal country going forward like that. The only real way forward is a one-state solution. Incorporate all of the occupied territories and all of the inhabitants of those territories into one country with equal citizenship rights. Yes, that will mean that Israel will have a Palestinian majority and it will no longer be a so-called Jewish state, but it can become a normal, healthy society. I mean, if Zionism means upholding the right of Jews to live in Palestine, well, no one ever said they didn't have that right. No one ever had a problem with that, certainly not the Muslims. But if Zionism means ethnic Jewish supremacy, well, I mean, what civilized person would endorse something like that in the 21st century? There were always Jews in Palestine during the Muslim Empire. And there were Jews in Palestine when the Zionists came, and the Zionists fought against them. But if you want your country to ever be normal, then you're going to have to go back in history and learn from the history of those Palestinian Jews who knew how to get along with their neighbors and who lived peacefully with the Arabs, who lived peacefully with the Palestinians, the Jews who rightly saw the Zionists as colonizers and as people who disrupted their society, because those same Zionists and that same ideology is disrupting your society today. The Israelis can't possibly like being the way their country is now. There's no way they like that. They're human beings. They hate Netanyahu, and most of them blame the government for what's going on right now, and rightly so. But look how opposed that is to the American narrative. You know, look at how at odds the American narrative is from the way Israelis themselves feel, the Western narrative. You need to stop letting America talk for you. They're destroying you. The perspective of the average Israeli is diametrically the opposite of what the Americans are saying. I mean, look at those kids at the rave when the Hamas attack happened. And remember that military service is compulsory in Israel. So that means that all of those kids at that rave were IDF soldiers at one point. And all those kids have military training, but those aren't soldiers. I mean, even the active soldiers of the IDF aren't soldiers. The IDF of 2023 is not the IDF of 1956 or 1967 or even of the 1980s. These people don't want to be warriors. They just want to live their lives. But America won't let them. I mean, look at the Israelis on TikTok or Instagram. What do you think they would rather be doing with their lives? Do you think they have it in them to that they're so committed to Zionism that they want to dedicate their lives to harsh, stoic drills and training all day, self-sacrifice, discipline, and so on, in order to make Israel a warrior nation? Well, they'd rather be in Dubai. You know it and I know it. If they had a choice between the path that Netanyahu and the United States wants for them, which is the path of endless strife and conflict and bloodshed, if they had a choice between that or following the path of a one-state solution that would flood that country with Gulf investment, Gulf money, and would allow them to just basically lay on the beach all day smoking hashish, what do you think they would prefer? No, Israel has to detach itself from the U.S. They need to start looking to the BRICS nations for diplomatic resolutions and solve these problems together with the Global South. And they need to send this message to the diaspora and try to de-radicalize those people and stop the influx of crazy settler extremists to their country. That's a destabilizing force in your society. I mean, just like always, the Muslims, the Arabs, are giving Jews a way out of Western exploitation and violence, because that's all the West is doing, if you think about it, if you think it through. You can't possibly be foolish enough not to see that. I mean, we've always heard about how smart Jewish people are. So surely you can see that the West is just throwing you into violence and suffering and chaos. They're just using you. But the Arabs, the Muslims, genuinely want peace and stability, but with justice and fairness. You believe in justice and fairness, don't you? You want peace and stability, don't you? Well, the only way that's ever going to be brought about is when you disentangle yourselves from the United States, honestly. I think you should enact a law in Israel, in fact, against dual citizenship. Don't let anyone be a citizen of Israel while still holding a passport for another country. Then you can weed out, you know, who's really invested in your society and who isn't. I think at least 20% of Israelis, last time I checked, I think around 20% of Israelis hold dual citizenship. And about half of those only live in Israel part-time. They're seasonal Zionists. And these are most likely going to be, the settler types, who are basically sort of a Jewish ISIS, a Jewish Daesh. You don't want people like that in your society. I mean, it will also be from the part-time seasonal Zionists, you also have the business people who have divided interests. You need to weed those people out. They're destabilizing. And you certainly shouldn't be allowed to serve in the government if you have dual citizenship. How can you be sure which country's interests they're serving? Particularly if they're American Israelis, if they hold dual citizenship of Israel and the United States, which country are they serving? I mean, how many of these people in the government or elsewhere, but especially in the government, how many of these people would be willing to sacrifice their U.S. passport for Israel? Not many, I promise you that. Well, that shows divided loyalty. And that's at least one of the reasons why there's so much corruption in your government. Because most of the people are serving American interests. Most of the politicians are serving American interests, European interests. Well, you and I know that Netanyahu is about 95% more likely to retire in Florida than in Israel. So if you can get people who are actually committed to Israel being a proper, normal country, people who are genuinely interested in the welfare of the Israeli people, I think you would see peace a lot sooner. And that's obviously in the best interest of Israel. So you need to get closer to the Arabs. You need to get closer to the Muslims and liberate yourselves from being nothing but an American tool in the Middle East, because that's what you are. And that's what they're treating you as. I mean, haven't you ever noticed that the most enthusiastic supporters of Zionism in the West and in the United States among non-Jews are exactly those same groups of people who historically have been the most anti-Semitic people. While the original Zionists got support from the most Jewish-hating segments of Europe back in the day. Everyone knows that. That's not a secret. And they haven't changed. The Westerners haven't changed. Those same anti-Semitic groups haven't changed. They're just the way they've always been. They supported Zionism back then because they wanted Jews to be anywhere else but next to them. And they feel the same way today. And their so-called support for Israel right now is just as anti-Semitic as it has always been. They want to see you in conflict. They want to see you in misery. They want to see you in insecurity, and they want you to be dependent and subject. It's nothing but hate, but you fooled yourselves into thinking it's love. You fooled yourselves into thinking it's friendship when they're your worst enemy. They're the same people who persecuted you for centuries, and they're persecuting you right now, just doing it more cleverly. And the same people who were historically the most welcoming to you and the most kind to you are the same people that they want you to be at war with. I'm telling you, you're getting played. You should be smarter than that. They don't want good for you. They never did. I mean, what good have you gotten, actually? Hundreds of thousands of your sons and daughters right now have been called up to go to the slaughter by America and their sponsored agents in your government. Hundreds of billions of dollars have been spent only to make you more insecure and line the pockets of your corrupt politicians while average Israelis are struggling with the cost of living, and no one cares. Your politicians don't care, and who they work for doesn't care, which is the United States. They hate you, and they hate us. You and I both know it. We should more or less be on the same side, but they keep making you do things that make it impossible for us to side with you, and that's the whole trick, and you keep falling for it. We don't have a problem with Jews. We never did. Muslims don't have a problem with Jews, and history attests to that fact. But the people who do have a problem with Jews are the biggest backers of Zionism, and we do have a problem with Zionism. And you should too, because it's a plot that's against you and not for you. If you think about it, they're tricking you in every which way. The U.S. didn't defeat the Nazis and liberate the concentration camps. Russia did that. Some of the biggest backers of the Nazis were in America. And after the war, they brought over all the top Nazis in Operation Paperclip, and you know it. They brought them over after the war to help them in their science and engineering and development and so on. Everyone knows that. And right now, they're backing an army in Ukraine who literally fly the swastika, fighting against the country that ended the Holocaust. And you're supporting them. You see how confused you are? Don't you see how they've never changed? How the West has never changed? Don't you see how they want you to be against anyone who ever gave you refuge, anyone who was ever decent to you, and you still think this is support, you still think this is love, you think this is friendship, they're using you and they're ruining you because they never stopped being anti-Semitic. That's the truth. They never stopped being anti-Semitic. So my message to Israelis would be, stop being led by the nose by anti-Semites and actually make peace with the Semites, with the Arabs, with the Muslims, and get yourselves free once and for all from the United States, from Europe, and from Zionist anti-Semitic manipulation, because it's going to be the death of your country. It's going to be the death of your society. And like I said, it's going to be the death of your souls, because in order for you to do what the United States wants you to do, you have to do things that are against your belief system. You have to do things that are against your morality. You have to do things that are against your own sense of humanity. And it's going to destroy your reputation, and it is destroying your reputation all across the world, and more importantly, across the global south, which is where the future is. So you need to stop being manipulated by the West. You need to stop being manipulated by the United States, and stop being manipulated by the people who are taking money from the United States and lining their pockets with it. They're sacrificing your children, they're sacrificing your sons and daughters, they're sacrificing your quality of life, and they're sacrificing your future just to line their pockets. Everybody knows that Netanyahu is doing nothing now but trying to save his political career, no matter how many lives have to be lost, Palestinian lives or Israeli lives. He doesn't care, and neither does America. So you need to wake up and start using that great brain that we all keep hearing about.
And that was commentary by Shahid Bolson. Next, we have the first part of a long interview with Norman Finkelstein.
You know, let's say when I write books, You know what my advance is? About $2,000.
What?
Yeah.
Why?
There's one very big disadvantage of being rich. In my opinion, a very big disadvantage. You can never trust anyone around you. 15,000 children buried under rubble. Life is so cheap. To tell you the truth, I detest them. I detest Scholz, that Nazi Princess von der Leyen. Every time I look at Biden, I think to myself, no, I'm not voting for that guy. The guy is a moron. He's a murderer. And he looks like an exhibit in Madame Tussauds wax museum. The Germans killed 30 million Russian people. Calm down. You want to send tanks to Ukraine on the Russian border? I hope you put yourselves in those tanks, and I hope the Russians burn them to a crisp.
Mr. Finkelstein, thank you so much for allowing us into your living space, your working space. We are very happy to learn from you how I feel it to collect the lost and scattered goods that belong to all of us in the search of the truth. Can you share a truth with us that you have come across again and again in your life?
There are a lot of decent people in the world. There are a lot of smart people in the world. There are a lot of creative people in the world who, because of the nature of our system, haven't been given a chance in life. And that the main purpose, at least in my life, and has been to give those who haven't had a chance in life to improve their prospects. That's one side of the coin. The other side of the coin is there are very, very few good people in power. Power and privilege are deeply corrupting. And I thank my lucky stars, I never pursued a path in life such that I ended up being either rich or powerful, because I don't believe it's possible to be either or both without being morally depraved.
Do you feel that you have fulfilled your full potential?
The American inventor, Thomas Edison, the fellow who invented the light bulb, he famously once said, "Genius is 1% inspiration and 99% perspiration." I've been around people who qualify as genius. A close friend of mine for 40 years was Noam Chomsky, who I would say by any reckoning is one of the great minds in human history. He had the 1% inspiration. That's the luck of the draw. It was in his DNA. But he also put in the 99% of perspiration. I knew him quite well. He worked nonstop with a kind of dedication that verged on fanaticism to his beliefs, to his causes, and to the life of the mind. I didn't get that 1%, and very few people do. I think I did my best to maximize the 99% of perspiration. I worked very hard. I don't think I squandered in my life. Squandered meaning wasted. I don't think I squandered much time in my life. I worked very, very hard. I perhaps made an error of working too hard with what's called, the expression is, with diminishing returns. So you can put in 8 hours and get an 8-hour return. But over time, if you keep putting in 8 hours, you're going to get just a 1-hour return. And it would have been much wiser on my part when I saw the diminishing returns to just stop and do something else. If you read the lives of the great revolutionaries of the 20th century, for example, the Polish-German revolutionary Rosa Luxemburg, her life was actually a very full life. She knew geology, she knew botany, she knew literature. And if you read about her years in prison, she was doing many things. Even though she was completely devoted to the cause, she had a scrapbook and collected plant life. And she was translating into German the Russian author, while she was in prison, Korolenko. And I wish I had that capacity. My problem is I get overcome with guilt. I feel like, no, I should be working now. There's a famine in Gaza. There are 1 million children who are facing imminent death. So I can't do what they did. I wish I could. Lenin, Vladimir Ilyich, he loved to play chess. And he was a fanatic about chess, absolute fanatic. People said when he would lose a game, he would cry like a baby. He was such a sore loser. So they lived very full lives. And of course, Trotsky was a great literary critic. Even in the middle of the Civil War in Russia, as he was going in his famous iron car from front to front, while he was in the iron car, he was writing literary criticism. So I think I did make a mistake in pursuing my work beyond the point where the returns made it a wise thing to do. But I work nonstop. My whole life is on my bookshelves.
Did you miss something?
I missed many things. That's life. Life is about making choices. And then you, at the end, the one thing I could say is sometimes people think I am irrational or whimsical, that I don't take into account consequences with my actions. It's totally untrue. When you're a person, when you're a dissident,
Just a second. Sorry for interrupting.
I guess they caught the Stasi agent. You wasted your time. When you're a dissident, every step along the way in life, you're going to reach moments. I call them moments of truth, where you know if you say X, you're going to take the path to fame and fortune. And if you say Y, you are going to end up a pariah. And every step of the way in my life, I knew when those moments of truth came. It wasn't like, in retrospect, oh my God, what did I do? It was never like that. I knew exactly what I was doing. I made those choices. So I have no grounds to be bitter. And overall, I'm not bitter. I knew exactly at every step of the way what would be the consequences if I said Y instead of X or B instead of A. So at this point in my life, as I said, I don't really have grounds for regrets because I knew exactly what I was doing. I was an adult. I understood the consequences of what I was doing, and I weighed them. Though most often, I never even had to weigh. I knew what I was going to do with my life, and I was never tempted ever by fortune or by fame. I can't say it never interested me, because that wouldn't be human, but it never tempted me. I always knew that I would follow the path of truth and justice as I understood it, and the other things, they have their allure, which means attraction. And like, where if I deny that, I wouldn't be human. But they did not tempt me. I got that from my parents. They would not have ended up where they did. They would not have ended up where they did if there were more people of conscience. So I, out of respect for what they had to endure in their lives, I would never be tempted by things which, in my view, come with a very big price. If you want the fame and you want the fortune, attached to it is, in my opinion, a very heavy price, which I have never even entertained the possibility of paying. Never, ever crossed my mind. I remember Professor Chomsky's first wife. She died of cancer. She was a close friend of mine. And occasionally she would reprimand her husband, Noam Chomsky, for not warning me sufficiently of the price I would pay. And I would tell her, Carol, it's just not true. He warned me many times. But there was never any possibility that I would be tempted, because as you know, I never had a job in life. I never had a job. Never. It's a strange thing when you come to the end of your life and you realize you were never employed. Yeah, it's an oddity. I remember I used to say, my brothers are already retired, and I'm still looking for my first job, which never came. So, I felt she was incorrect about that. He warned me. But I guess he also knew I would not pay heed to his warnings.
You are 70 years old now.
Mm-hmm.
Have you never thought about laying on the beach, watching birds? Or
I do that every day. And I go to, in the afternoon, I go to the beach. And I walk along, or jog. The summer I jog, in the winter the wind is too intense at the beach, so I walk. But every single day.
You said you never had a job, but you gained a lot of attention. The world's media attacked you for your books and your statements. Your lectures were canceled. You were denied tenure at a university. and you were banned from entering the country you criticized. What else would you put on the line for your truth?
Well, obviously, when you look at the historical figures, they all put their lives on the line. That's a very common ending to most of the historical figures, be it a Martin Luther King, a Mahatma Gandhi, a Malcolm X, even Nelson Mandela. For all intents and purposes, he was dead. I mean, he was in jail for 28 years. That's his whole life.
Yeah.
So whether I would put myself, it would be silly for me to say, oh, sure, that's a completely absurd statement to make. What I would want to believe is that if I were presented with circumstances similar to those of the others, that I would rise to the occasion. I can't predict that I would. I love life. I can't predict it, but I would want to think that I would be able to rise to the occasion as the others did. You know, Rosa was in jail for the whole of World War I. Well, when she was released, her comrades were shocked. She had a shock of black hair, which had gone all white in prison, all white. And at that point, the German Revolution broke out without skipping a beat. I mean, she just went right into the revolution with Karl Kautsky. No time to catch a breath. I can't even fathom that. You know, since October 7th, I've been working nonstop. And I'm so tired. I'm so exhausted. And each day I say, I don't know how much more longer I can do this. But with Rosa, she went right into the revolution. And her death was really quite a horror. The precursors of the Nazis at that time, they beat her so brutally. There was an eyewitness, a woman. She said she had never seen a human being brutalized the way Rosa Luxemburg was. And then they, you know, they threw her in the ocean and her body was washed up 3 months later. So they're deeply inspirational to me, and so far that hasn't happened to me.
But if you're ready to die for your...
I didn't say I was ready. That's a very absurd statement to make. I said, were I put in the same circumstances as others who have preceded me, I would like to believe I were able to rise to the occasion.
But why? My question is, what are you fighting for and against whom?
Each day for the past couple of weeks, as I'm going to the beach, I go every day, I told you, there is a homeless person. And I got to talk to him. He finished high school. He did go to college. Not a great college, but not an awful college either. LaGuardia College. It's not terrible. And of course, I ask him, why are you out here? He just is in rags on the bench. And I said, don't you have family? And he said, my mother doesn't want to have anything to do with me anymore. He's 32. He's not a kid. My mother doesn't want to have anything to do with me. He said his brother doesn't have space in his home. And I said, did you ever have a job? And he said, yeah, but I just couldn't keep the job. I didn't get along with the coworkers. And you can imagine he has some sort of mental disorder. I'm not going to pretend that that doesn't exist. It probably is the case. Otherwise, why would his mother give up on him? But should a human being, even dogs have shelters. Should a human being be out on the bench in the winter? The summer, it's not a horror. But in the winter, in the snow, in the rain, that doesn't compute for me. A system that allows that is deeply depraved amidst the riches of our society. You know, we have a significant homelessness problem in New York. But do you know what we also have? We have a significant number of skyscrapers which are literally empty. They're empty. There are all these new buildings that went up. The space in them is purchased by people from the Gulf, billionaires from China, oligarchs from Russia, and whole buildings, top of the line, are completely empty. I know a guy who lives in one. He calls his building the mausoleum. He's never seen a human being in the building. He's never seen a human being in the building. So what do you say about a system which simultaneously has 30,000 or so homeless people who are existing in the elements, and on the other side, you have these skyscrapers that are empty? That doesn't compute for me. Yesterday, the headline in New York Times was, U.S. gave money to Ukraine and gave money to Israel, billions, 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 billions. And our president, he declared after the signing of the bill, this was a victory, this is his words, it was the headline of the Times, this was a victory for world peace. You know, that's like a satire of George Orwell's 1984. For him to declare a victory for world peace. Is he a maniac? Is he a lunatic? Is he a freak of nature? No. What do you say about a statement like that? Who is more mentally ill? Really, ask yourself the question. That fellow who doesn't get along with his coworkers, and I assume he has some sort of mental disorder or disability, or somebody who declares sending billions of dollars to a genocidal state is a victory for world peace. I don't understand, honestly, I couldn't even imagine how any sane human being could coexist with the kind of world we live in. I really can't. I can't fathom it. And do you know what? I don't want to fathom it. I was once in a debate not too long ago with Israel's chief historian, and we were talking about the various crimes committed by the Israeli Defense Forces, and he would say things like, you have to get inside the head of the Israeli pilots. You have to get. I said, Professor Morris, I don't want to get inside their head. I honestly don't want to get inside a lunatic's head. I don't want to go there. You have to get inside the mentality of Israelis. I don't want to get inside the mentality of Israelis. I think they're all crazy. I'm not interested in getting inside their head.
But if you talk about the homelessness problem and the skyscrapers that are empty, do you think that the man who is homeless, is this a side effect or is it part of the system somehow?
It's clearly part of the system. You cannot tell me that a sane society couldn't figure out a way to accommodate this person except to throw him into the street. I cannot believe that. There has to be a way to do. You know how I know? Because And I'm not being facetious here. I'm being absolutely honest. We would not allow that to happen to a dog. We have an American Society for the Protection of Cruelty to Animals, ASPCA. They would not do that to a dog. That to me is without question. So if you're telling me that we can't do better as a society than to treat a human being worse than a dog, I'm all for protecting dogs from cruelty. That's fine. I'm a vegetarian. I believe in the equality of all sentient life. But surely that has to include a young man who did finish high school, who did finish college, but he seems to have I didn't say he finished college. He attended college. I'm not sure how far he went. Who seems to have some sort of mental disability that he's unable to get along with his coworkers. In a sane society, they would just have trained him on a computer and he can work at home.
Okay, now tell me, who is responsible?
I think it's a wretched system. I am very old-fashioned about that. I think a system that's built on profit, on accumulation of wealth, cannot at the same time serve human needs. I think that conflict always comes, and I honestly don't believe, and I've given it a lot of thought. I don't see any necessity at this point for non-stop technological development. I don't think having one more app and another app and another app and another app and another app, I don't think that makes people happier. I don't. I think you can live a perfectly satisfying life on a very modest income. All you have to do is set yourself meaningful goals in your life, and you would have a fully satisfactory existence. If you were to ask me, I think even though the classic version of a progressive or leftist vision sees this upward curve of progress, I don't believe in the upward curve of progress. I don't. Maybe that makes me out of sync with the tradition to which I identify, But I think for every quote-unquote progressive development or improvement, I think there's always a negative side to it. There's always a negative side to it. Are the social media great? Good? Yes. I'm not going to deny that. Is there a lot of useful information on the web? Of course. Has it simplified a lot of research? Of course. But what's the price? People don't read anymore. They don't read books. They don't think books are a necessary ingredient in intellectual endeavor. All you'd have to do is tweet some thought off the top of your head. I don't think that's a great development. As I said, if you look at the quality of leftist thought over the last 100 years, there's a precipitous decline in the quality of leftist thought. After Professor Chomsky passes, I don't think there is any significant person on the left any longer. And I think that's true all around. Am I glad I have the computer? Yes, but you know what? I don't own an iPhone. I never go on the social media. I have people who put stuff up for me. I don't go on any of the social media. I consider all those things a distraction from a meaningful life. So I will acknowledge that there's a value to some of the improvements in technology. But in general, I think you can live a perfectly meaningful, satisfied life if we just leveled off technological development at the current development. The whole nature of our system could be captured. It's very easy to capture the essence of our system. The essence of our system is, come Christmas time, the holiday season, most department stores and retail outlets, they depend on Christmas time for 20% of their sales for the whole year. About 10 to 20%. It's the Christmas season. Okay? Now, then at the end of the Christmas season, they tell you whether sales went up. And if sales went up 50%, let's say, it's a bonanza. Everybody's very excited. If it goes down, then it's a disaster. Okay? A disaster. Now, everybody agrees, we do, the Earth's resources are finite. So rationally, you should be euphoric if sales went down. It means fewer of our Earth's resources are being squandered, and there will be more available for future generations. So you should be very happy that sales have precipitously dropped. And all that means is people came to the realization, we didn't need to purchase that piece of junk or that piece of junk, that we will be perfectly happy without it. Why should that be a source of despair, despondency, a tragedy? But it's built into the nature of our system that unless sales soar, it's a tragedy. I would think it's a wonderful, I'm not trying to be facetious. I think it's a wonderful development. It means people have found non-material ways to happiness, pleasure, enjoyment. They decide, you know what? I don't need another iPhone. I'll just go and walk in the park. No, that's true.
Yeah. And I think we would have fewer exploitation, fewer wars for resources.
We would have a lot less war, a lot less death, a lot less destruction. I mean, the very fact that our country, which is supposedly the leading democracy and capitalist country in the world, the very fact that for the second time, the very best that our political system could generate of the 360 million people, the very best our system could generate for the second time is Biden and Trump. That's a very deep, that's not a joke. That's a deep insight into how decayed this system is. Every time I look at Biden, I think to myself, no. I'm not voting for that guy. The guy is a moron. He's a murderer. And he looks like an exhibit in Madame Tussauds Wax Museum. I'm not voting for him. I resolve it. And I think, okay, will I accept Trump as president? No. And I go through this every day. Every day. I will not vote for him. And then I think, but that means him. And I think, 4 years. I can't take Biden for 4 more years. I cannot take that man for four. It's funny, but what does it tell you about the system? Not once, but twice, we couldn't generate two candidates better than Trump and Biden. Now, you might say, well, that's just happenstance. That's just serendipity. That's just a roll of the dice. No. These are two deeply entrenched political parties going back a very long ways. If they couldn't produce anything better than these two men, it means those two political parties are rotten to the core. Rotten, rotten, rotten to the core. So, to get back to your original question, there's no possibility that I, or in my opinion, any rational person, could reconcile themselves to such a wretched system. Now, you might say, but the United States is not the end of the world. There's also Europe. There's also your government, which I could do without. Tell you the truth, I detest them. I detest Scholz, that Nazi princess von der Leyen. I loathe them. Now, I recognize I'm old enough to acknowledge there's a moral dilemma in the case of Germany when it comes, for example, to Israel and the Palestinians. With von der Leyen, I don't recognize any moral dilemma. She's a Nazi. She's a Nazi princess. She looks like it. She does. The lean, blonde-haired, blue-eyed Nazi ubermenschen. She's exactly the type. You could see her in the crisp Nazi uniform. She looks it. She looks the part. But, you know, there are other Germans who I recognize the dilemma. However, having recognized the dilemma, there are other ways you could have handled it. Number one, when it comes to Russia, you, and I don't mean you personally, the Germans killed 30 million Russian people. Calm down. You want to send tanks to Ukraine on the Russian border? I hope you put yourselves in those tanks, and I hope the Russians burn them to a crisp. Don't be sending your German tanks on the Russian border. You killed 30 million people. Know your place. When it comes to Israel and Palestine, I recognize the dilemma, but they could simply have said, we will defer in all our judgments to what UN officials are saying. The UN officials have established a reputation, a track record for objectivity, and we will accept their determinations as our own. That, to me, would have been a perfectly legitimate position. Defer to what Gutierrez says. Defer to what the head of UNRWA, Philippe Lazzarini. Defer to even what Joseph Borrell, your European foreign policy chief. That, to me, was a reasonable position. But what they're doing? Abetting a genocide? No. No, I don't accept that, and I recognize the morally difficult, the fancy English word is fraught. That means heavy with burdens. I recognize the morally fraught position, but the way they're handling it, totally, completely unacceptable.
And that was Normal Finkelstein. Unfortunately, we had to truncate that interview and only present about half of it. The rest of it is available on YouTube. So if you do a search for Norman Finkelstein, That's FINKELSTEIN. On YouTube, you will locate this video that I took the soundtrack from. The video is called The Sickness of Capitalism.